Welcome to Volume 1, Episode 6 of Vermont Movement News. This episode features interviews with Asma Elhouni and Kira Kelly, who are at the July 30th, 2019 action at the Hartford Select Board, discussing a fair and impartial policing policy, FIP, that would forbid the Hartford police from collaborating or colluding with federal ICE agents. After discussing the situation in Hartford, we will move on to a report back and discussion with Jennifer Decker, who has been active in the movement to stop nuclear bombers from being based in South Burlington at the Burlington International Airport. I first became aware of the situation with Hartford Select Board when I was asked to help with security at the July 30th action, as the previous Select Board meeting was apparently marred by threats of violence and verbal altercations. Due to this, I was not paying close attention to what was happening with the Select Board, but rather paying attention to anyone who seemed like they were getting overtly agitated during the meeting. What I did see were members of the affected immigrant community giving heart-wrenching testimony while being mocked by conservative members who seemed to have little sympathy or compassion for their plight. The conservatives seemed to be more concerned with an abstract obedience for the law. The Select Board seemingly dragged the meeting and testimony out for hours in what seemed to look a lot like a filibuster. The meeting was closed for business hours after the meeting began, but the Select Board continued to hear testimony that they were obviously not willing to act on. When the Select Board started to get ready to leave, members of the audience took to the stage and linked arms, forcing the Select Board members to leave out the back or force themselves out through the protesters. Loud protest ensued, and the crowd diminished as the core protesters prepared themselves to be arrested. I remained with them, wearing my security and legal observer hat, figuratively, of course. The protesters gave a poignant live stream from the stage of the auditorium. The tag for the protest was Occupy Hartford High, which warmed my heart, as years before I had been part of the Occupy movement. At 3:30 in the morning, it became obvious that the town played its hand the best it could by not arresting any protesters. So we all went home. Here is Asma Elhouni, who was one of the lead organizers of this action. It was a pleasure and honor to watch the courageous activists the night of July 30th. Hello, today we have Asma Elhouni, who is an amazing activist who's been active in shutting down alt-right speakers and pressuring the Hartford Town Select Board to do the right thing about Pauli Migra. Welcome, Asma.
Thanks for having me.
So can you tell me a little bit about what precipitated the protests in Hartford?
So basically we're all aware that there is clearly collaboration between police and Immigration Customs Enforcement or Border Patrol. And there's clearly a need for local governments, local leaders to protect their community members when we have an attack from the federal government. And we want to make sure at least the local governments can protect our communities when there is a full-blown attack. And just to be clear, there was always an attack, and that's why I didn't mention this administration. But clearly, with this administration, we see a spike in deportations and collaboration with police and Immigration Customs Enforcement. So we just wanted to make sure that this does not happen in our town. And I can share a little bit more, maybe a little later in the interview, but there was something new that recently happened that is clear indication of what we're talking about.
So when did the conflict with the town start?
This started in December of last year. We sat with the police chief. That's the first person we spoke with after we heard there was an incident in the town. And he assured us that there's no collaboration with his police force and ICE. And we said, well, if that's the case, then he wouldn't mind making sure that there's a policy that ensures there's no collaboration. And then from there, he basically dropped us off. And when I say dropped us off, basically did not want to talk about it anymore. And so we knew that we needed to talk to our town. And so we went through our Select Board, which is equivalent to a city hall or city council rather, for many other parts of the country. And we sat with each one of the select board members to make sure they understood what policy we're asking for and that it wouldn't be the first time a local town had a policy like this, as in fact, there is a town in the state of Vermont called Winooski that already has what we're trying to implement. So it's not like we're treading new territory. There is a town that has already been courageous enough to implement such policy to ensure its police don't collaborate. And we talked with every single one except one who did not accept our invitation. And we had someone from affected community, and we did this in partnership with Migrant Justice, who is a leader in immigrant rights in Vermont. And they all seemed to be on board. And we were ready to go ahead and present an ordinance. And then it took an interesting turn.
So what was that turn?
The day before the wonderful ordinance that we decided to go ahead and present and that everyone was on board with. And in fact, a proof that everyone was on board with it was the Valley News had a signed letter that everyone signed on to that seemed like everyone is on board with this ordinance, and including the reluctant chief of police. But what was interesting is all of a sudden we had something new, and the very thing that we were protecting immigrants from was placed inside the ordinance, which was something we call the savings clause, which basically says that we can't prohibit local government from sharing information with the federal government. And this is a unconstitutional, but it is a law, but it is an unconstitutional law. And so they wanted to put that back into the ordinance without discussing it with us. And that's why the last select board meeting went the way it went. And that's why we were clearly upset that we would agree on something. And all of a sudden, because the chief of police all of a sudden decided he doesn't want to agree to this, then everybody else decided to not agree as well, which is very disturbing when we're valuing the police force more than the affected community, their wishes to not be held accountable versus holding them accountable and ensuring the safety of our community. And I did say I had some disturbing news, and so maybe this is a good time to share. The very reason why we want this ordinance is because of what happened on July 31st, the next day after our town meeting, our select board meeting. So we just got word that there was an ICE raid in White River Junction.
Do you know if the local police had anything to do with that?
Yeah, so we heard that there were 9 people picked up in White River Junction, and we did confirm this, so it's not just word of mouth. And what we know is that the police department was in fact informed that ICE would be coming into their town, and we don't know to what extent they were collaborating, but to me, the very mere fact that the federal government, ICE or Border Patrol, would pick up the phone and call Chief Kasten to tell him that they are coming into his town is clear collaboration, in my view. And this is exactly what we're trying to prevent with an ordinance. And so we're not done, and they are going to hear from us, the town, and it's important that people voice their outrage about this.
It's horrific. I've been listening to a lot of coverage regarding sanctuary cities. It seems like it's a pattern that cities will pass these ordinances but have all sorts of cutouts that basically render the ordinances and the sanctuary city status null. It's just for show. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I think it's time we be brave and stop doing things just to appear welcoming. Immigrants know that we're not welcoming when we are making concessions like that. And so we have to be brave. We have to be bold. Throughout history, people have broken laws in order to change them, right? And so I think this is a time to do that. We shouldn't be compromising on the backs of immigrants. We need to stop doing that. We need to stop talking and start doing. And so it's not enough to say we're sanctuary. We have to actually be sanctuary. And that means being brave and going against 1373, which courts have ruled is unconstitutional. So what interpretation are we as a town willing to uphold? Yeah. I was just basically saying, I think it's time to be brave and bold and be willing to break national laws that go against the Constitution, for example, 1373, and as a town, be brave to make sure we're welcoming and protecting our residents.
It seems like the argument of the right wing at the select board meeting has always been, you have to follow the laws, and we have a constitutional country, and we can work through the system to change the laws. How can you, what's your response to that?
My response to that is two. One, there's always been people throughout history that have broken laws in order to change laws. And two, this is literally working within a system, because in order for something to be contested, laws are broken, taken to the Supreme Court, and challenged. You could say this is working within the system, but breaking the very flawed, unconstitutional laws that are currently in place. So I think to say we must follow laws, we must say, okay, then if you live in the civil rights era, you would be for segregation because it was a law. You would be okay with slavery because once upon a time that was a law. So I think we need to start examining our morals when it comes to depending on following laws as opposed to morality and the humanity of all people.
Excellent. So you would argue for following a higher law that respects humanity and people.
Yes, human rights over laws which could be flawed.
So what's next with this struggle?
So what's next is after this raid, this ICE raid in our town, we plan on making our voices heard. And we're going to demand that this ordinance be passed as soon as possible. And we're inviting everyone to come out. So we're most likely going to be having a rally on Wednesday at 5 p.m. in front of City Hall in White River Junction, so which is in Hartford. So we're asking everyone to please come out and demand an ordinance to protect people within Hartford and also people traveling within Hartford as well.
Excellent. Can you talk to how ICE and the Border Patrol has been targeting people at the bus station and I believe the train station as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what ICE and Border Patrol have been doing, specifically in Hartford, is they've been going onto our train stations and buses looking for people who don't have documentation. And so that's absolutely ridiculous. And also, when we're talking about that, let's also talk about the checkpoints that they're randomly setting up to look for individuals who don't have documentation. And so if you can imagine boarding a bus, a train, or being stopped at a checkpoint randomly and being asked the exact words, because I've been through a checkpoint, are you a citizen? That's literally the question. And so this should bring up thoughts of fascism. It should bring up thoughts of Nazi Germany. We should not be okay with this. And so this is happening under our noses. And I'm hoping that if people are around when that happens, that they do the right thing and not answer those questions on purpose, because you have a constitutional right to not answer those questions. And if you see someone being detained, that we ensure that we try to make sure that we're trying to stop that from happening, right? Because what if that was your family member, and we have privileges if we have documentation to be able to say this is wrong and to tape what we see happening and send it to people like the ACLU or people who organize around this to see what can be done. Because most of the time they're actually breaking laws when they're actually picking people up. And one of the tricks they tend to do is they show some sort of warrant, a paper, which is really an administrative warrant, which doesn't give them actual right to pick someone up. And unfortunately, people are unaware that it's not a judicial warrant, which everyone has to comply with. And so because it looks like a judicial warrant, it's a piece of paper, it looks official. People think that they have to open their homes to ICE agents when they don't in fact have to do that. they do not have to open their homes when it's just an administrative warrant. And 90-some% of the time, it's just an administrative warrant and not a judicial warrant. So yeah, it's outrageous. And again, this is not new, but this is on immigration, anti-immigration laws and policies on steroids. But this isn't new. And just want to kind of emphasize that our country, even with Democrats in power, have also done the same.
Yeah, the last president, I believe, was called the deporter in chief by many of us. Correct. Who oppose this kind of stuff.
Right. Right. Thank you for reminding everyone of that. Absolutely correct.
Yeah. So it's not a partisan war against Trump or whatever. This has been horrific for decades, as long as I've been aware of immigration.
Including at the current moment when we have, it's the Democrats that are signing off on Trump's request for more money. So though they want to appear as if they are pro-immigration and pro-immigrant rights, it's their pens that are signing off on the money that Trump is requesting. And so we need to hold our congressional leaders who are signing off on the checks accountable, including in New Hampshire, which we're not too far from New Hampshire. I live in Vermont, but Senator Shaheen, who is on the Appropriations Committee, and so she's consistently given Trump more and more money. And it's time we're bolder and hold her more accountable and stop giving her a pass and stop lifting her up as someone who upholds immigrant rights and start holding her accountable.
Have you had problems with Vermont legislators on these issues?
So currently, I know that in the last bill, Leahy signed opposing more money, which is great. But in the past, he has signed off. So we are happy that he did not sign the last one, but he hasn't been on the right side always. So we definitely have to make sure that we continue to hold him accountable. And I do believe that the reason why he voted the way he did this last time was because his constituents are putting him to the fire and making sure that he does so. So it's just really important that we're not just pointing to the person in the White House, but we're also holding our own congressional leaders accountable and making sure we're not giving them titles of immigrant rights activists or holding them up as people who support immigration when they're literally the ones who are supporting and signing off on the checks that Trump is asking for.
How has Senator Sanders been on these issues?
I think the last time he also did not sign off. But Senator Sanders needs to be braver in regards to particular checkpoints. We went to his office. We spoke with people in his office, and he wasn't present. And we wanted to speak with him. We had members of the affected community, and he wasn't present. We expressed our outrage. We want him to be more vocal about the checkpoints that are happening in Vermont and to say no more when they happen, and he hasn't done that. So we definitely need to see more from Bernie Sanders. And so I don't like to compare him to other people who are doing an awful job. I think we need to just have high standards, right, for our congressional leaders, and we shouldn't give them a pass just because they're doing a little better than others. And so we definitely need to see more from him.
Where have the checkpoints that you talk about been set up?
Well, the last one that we know of is right here in White River Junction when 6 were picked up on the 31st. And we know that 2 were picked up at a motel. And so that was a checkpoint. So that was the most recent one that happened, but they've happened. I think a month ago, there was another one. I don't recall where, but I know Migrant Justice was on top of that. And when they got there, it was dismantled. So, but yeah, they're definitely happening in Vermont and also in our neighboring state of New Hampshire.
Do they have to have permission from the local people to do that, or they just go out and do it, the Border Patrol?
Well, we don't know. What we do know is that when Border Patrol came to Hartford, they did in fact call the chief of police and let them know that they were going to be in his town. And so that leads me to believe that they're possibly calling police departments, and police departments are just not sharing that information to let them know that they're coming into their town. And to me, that's kind of like asking permission to let us do what we're going to do, and please don't interfere or assist if you can. So I don't have clear proof that other towns and other locations are definitely calling police departments, but we do know that's what happened in Hartford. And so that leads me to believe that it's possible in other places as well.
Is there anything more you want to share about the issues in Hartford and Vermont on immigration?
Yeah, I just hope that people come out on Wednesday, one, but also that everyone is doing this within their local town. We'd love to support, but please do come out and support us, because if this does pass here, this makes it more likely to pass in other places as well. And don't trust police departments that say they don't collaborate. Word of mouth, they need to have it in policy. And if they don't have it in policy, that should give you some real red flags that there is some real collaboration happening, and they're afraid to break that relationship that they have with ICE and Border Patrol.
Where I live on the Canadian border, and often Border Patrol helps local police pick up suspects. There was someone who borrowed a car and didn't return it in time. And there was this horrible case, and the Border Patrol helicopters helped the local police track this individual down. It was ridiculous.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's definitely collaboration, despite what police say. We are positive that there's a lot more collaboration than what people think. And so, yeah, it's really horrible. And we are living in a country that focuses on a security apparatus to fix our problems. And that's very unfortunate. And the ones that bear the brunt of that, of course, are already marginalized communities, brown, black, and of course, queer, trans, non-binary, the poor. Those are the ones who bear the brunt of this country's security apparatus.
So the strategies you've done are showing up at meetings, pressuring them. I understand you did a sit-in at the Hartford High School, Occupy Hartford High.
Right.
Do you think these tactics are actually having an effect? What can you talk about? What worked? What failed? What is happening with these tactics?
Yeah, sure. And so I am an organizer, and I do believe that there's many different tactics to achieve a goal. And so we started off with meetings, and then you move on. So you can do letters to the editor, and then you could do other things, theater, and eventually like sit-ins, and so many different ways of getting or applying pressure towards our targets. And in our case, it would be the select board, because they have the power to pass this ordinance that forces the chief to abide. And so there are many different tactics, and I support all different kinds of tactics. And people need to understand that those who are afraid of direct action, they're most likely people of privilege, because, or I should say, those who criticize direct action. When people have rights taken away from them and have doors shut in their face, another means of applying pressure is putting our bodies on the line. And people need to understand that there's power in people getting together and protesting and shutting streets and being loud. And so when we're not heard through other avenues, then there needs to be applied pressure through other means, including direct action. So there's people need to get on board with that.
Have you had much pushback, any backlash from the actions you've done so far?
Yeah, absolutely. Mostly by white people who think that the only way to get what you want is through meetings. And I constantly am telling them, we've done that route. We've been in meetings. We've got the okays. But when we have people who are now like valuing what the police department wants, which is not to be held accountable, more than the harm being done in their communities, then there needs to be more drastic measures, because meetings haven't worked. And so to take other steps to ensure we're being heard. So yeah, we definitely had some backlash there. With some white folks, but also I think it also brought out the fact that there is racism within the town of Hartford, as we were very well aware, but I think it brought it out, which I think the newspaper, the Valley News, isn't doing a good enough job of conveying to everyone that we have a racist problem, and we have people coming out to these select board meetings and saying slurs and saying go Trump and saying people need to go home. There's a clear view that we have a racist problem.
I've seen in Vermont many times people try to, there's Nazi stickers being put up and National Socialist cards being put in grocery stores. And I've had people tell me that's not really happening. That's outsiders. That's Vermont isn't racist.
Oh my gosh. I can give you examples of myself. There's a lot of good people, yes, but racism is very much alive, including in this progressive state of Vermont. Yeah, and so including by people that you wouldn't think could be racist. The other day I went to White River Junction and an old woman of all people said to me, "Oh, you guys are in the White House now, aren't you?" And so I'm just like, wow. And she walked into a store and another woman started talking to her on her way in. And I thought, wow, she seems so incredibly nice, but yet there's so much hatred there. So no, racism is very much there, including by people that don't even know they're racist. We're all racist because we live in an environment that socializes us to be. You know, whiteness, white is the norm, right? And so if we're not clearly intentionally working against racism, we're participating in it.
If you're swimming in a river full of sewage, you've got sewage on you.
Right, exactly. And so what are we doing to ensure that we're combating that or resisting that?
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to speak about the immigration issue. While I have you online, do you want to speak to some of the other actions you've taken at Dartmouth when Horowitz was there and D'Souza?
And so I guess maybe this is a good time to say that I'm just one of many organizers organizing around this Hartford thing. And some of those who were there for that protest at Dartmouth are very much involved in what's happening in Hartford as well. So for the protests in Hartford, I was there as a legal observer. And I was very proud of the students saying, "We don't want this person on our campus, this racist person," and that Dartmouth is enabling such hate when they're allowing someone to on their campus who is anti-Semitic, who is racist. And and so again, I just want to give the credit to many of the organizers, many of which are affected community, very proud of them. And I'm just one of many that are working on this. And it's important that people do speak up and resist and take action when injustice is happening. And injustice is happening everywhere. So there's no excuse for people when they say, "Oh, I just don't know what to do." There's many people already doing the work. Join those who are.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate you.
I will see you on Wednesday to watch what happens.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks so much. Take care.
During the action, I had the chance to talk to and film some of the conservative opposition to the immigration protesters. While I don't wish to give them a platform on Vermont Movement News, I hope to present some of their arguments fairly and allow the protesters to answer them. Here is Kira Kelly of the National Lawyers Guild, replaying her testimony for the Select Board and answering the legalistic position of the conservatives who were present.
Hi, my name is Kira Kelly. I'm an attorney. I run the Vermont chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, among other things. And I just want to talk a little bit about the law in the context of the Fair and Impartial Policing Ordinance that was up for debate at the Hartford Select Board meeting tonight. It didn't pass, and I was disappointed at the level of deference that people having this discussion seem to show to lawyers and the law. I'm not going to explain the law. I'm not going to go into details right now on the ample support for a blanket ban on ICE and cop communication, which is what the impacted community were advocating for tonight. The law exists to support it. The Constitution exists to support it. Could go into that, but I won't. Talk about that later. If that's of interest to anyone, reach out to me privately. What I do want to say is that it's really just a kind of should be obvious secret about the legal profession, and that is that lawyers are biased. We'll marshal any argument that we think we need to put together in order to achieve our personal or professional goals. It's not that I'm seeing the law in a certain situation when I'm like making a legal argument because I believe that that law is objectively correct. It is because I have a position that I've been asked to defend either by, you know, my boss in any given situation or by my own moral code. And it's the same for me, for the municipal attorney, for the corporation's attorney, for the government's attorney, anybody. Like, the law is just a tool that we manipulate to justify our position. You can make pretty much anything sound legal. You can make pretty much anything sound illegal. It just depends on, you know, how well you can phrase your words and what you're trying to argue for and, like, how much power your allies have. But I think that especially with municipal law and getting into these policies and getting into what does this federal law say, what does the state law say, how does it affect this, that, and the other, and drowning it in legal mumbo-jumbo, it just obscures the process of democracy by putting it out of reach of the everyday people and making it deliberately inaccessible. You're talking about common sense and logic and compassion and how to structure our society in a way that benefits the most people and keeps the most people safe. And that's something that a conversation that everybody should be able to participate in. But when we get way too into the legal weeds, it's just one of the ways that oppressive governments violate people's fundamental right to participate in creating a safe and ordered society by saying you are not allowed to participate unless you can converse on this totally arbitrary plane that is a legal dialogue. So just like taking into consideration that I'm a lawyer and that this is how lawyers work. And I'm sorry to all the other lawyers out there that are mad at me because I'm like spilling the secret, but like stop listening to lawyers and start listening to common sense, to your heart, to people that have experience and expertise in the direct objectives of what you want to see as a community. That's what we should be doing, is structuring our local governments around the policies and ordinances that create the change that we want to see, and not worrying about what legal argument does or doesn't support them. A town could enact an ordinance that doesn't violate 8 U.S.C. 1373, which is the main subject of the debate tonight, they could still get sued for that ordinance. They could get sued for any number of things that they do. You can sue anybody for anything, literally. All you have to do is file a complaint, and then, bam, you're in court. And that doesn't mean that the charge was legitimate or that you're going to win or lose. It's just you can get sued for anything. So if not getting sued is your main goal, then you are left to inaction. And inaction in a oppressive system is just bystander violence, and that's really not okay. Hartford should be enacting a policy that explicitly violates 8 U.S.C. 1373 because that federal law is unconstitutional, and because more importantly, that federal law allows ICE and cops to collaborate in ways that continue to just entrench the systemic racism and xenophobia in this country. So we should pass a law that complies with the Constitution and violates a federal law. The role of the judiciary, the role of the courts, of the judges, is to settle disputes about what law should or shouldn't be passed. That's not the role of the select board. That's not the role of the legislative body. We have separation of powers, so each body of government, each arm, does its task. So we shouldn't have these legislatures trying to worry about what is or isn't legal, what is or isn't constitutional, because in the end, they're just going to be listening to lawyers. Lawyers aren't judges either. The judges are the ones that make this decision, and like, even more importantly than the judges, should be the popular conscience. It should be, you know, our collective moral code, our agreements that we come to through citizens' assemblies and through trying to decide together what's objectively best for the common good. But a body of elected officials trying to kind of, what's the word, paternalistically decide on behalf of other people what's best for them in the face of like blatant testimony from the directly impacted community of what that community wants, and then the body of government saying, oh, there's factors that you don't understand. It's not about what people don't understand. The things that are important to understand are easy to articulate when we listen to each other patiently and with open minds. So that's the process that we need to go through, is that we need to pass these laws, let them go to court, and let's have the argument. Let's open up the discussion. Let's not be afraid to act because we're afraid that we're going to end up in court. Like, if we didn't act because we were afraid that we would end up in court, then we wouldn't be acting. And if the legislative body is like too afraid to pass a law because they think they might get sued for it, well, you can get sued for anything. So the only way to achieve that is to pass literally no laws at all, which is anarchy, is a state of lawlessness. So, you know, if you want that, I mean, I support that. If you don't want that, then pass some freaking laws. And when we're thinking about how to like work with our legislative bodies to pass these laws, we should be passing laws that protect people and challenging laws that violate the Constitution and violate people's rights. So we pass this ordinance and we challenge the law that the Trumpian, you know, Gestapo has passed in order to force cops and ICE to work together. we should be listening to, like, to our hearts and to logic and compassion rather than adhering to this deeply entrenched history that we should be ashamed of.
How would you answer the gentleman who was arguing for a law and order who said that nothing's unconstitutional until the Supreme Court says it is?
That was a completely incorrect interpretation of the ways that our government works together, the branches collaborate with each other. If a local law clearly violates the Constitution, you don't need a court to decide it. It just doesn't become formally overturned until the court decides it. So with gay marriage, right? States were banning same-sex marriage all across the country, and those laws did not get taken off the books until the Supreme Court said banning gay marriage is unconstitutional. However, that doesn't mean that those laws needed Supreme Court recognition to be unconstitutional. It just took a while for the Supreme Court to recognize it. All along, those laws that prevented two people who loved each other from getting married violate the principles in the Constitution. And it just took a while for it to work its way up to the Supreme Court, for the Supreme Court to validate it. But that doesn't mean that people shouldn't have been challenging those every step of the way and advocating, because if people don't challenge those laws in the first place, it'll never get to the Supreme Court and it'll never be formally overturned. But it takes brave people willing to say, fuck it, I'm getting married. Fuck it, I'm going to violate this. I'm going to take it to court. I'm going to argue this. I'm going to, like, share my story and share my truth and show people that these laws are fundamentally unconstitutional without needing recognition. The recognition just kind of seals the deal.
Thank you very much, Kara.
Thanks.
Blood in the water, and know that it won't last. My light is brighter, and I hope that it will last. You think that it's directions, the ones you never choose. It's the way that you're facing if you lose. Fortunes that you made, choices that you gave, you want it, you want it. Now I am like the sun, bordering no one, you got it. And I love you until we get by. Love you till we get by. It's only when you want to bear me all your fruit. It's a labor of love, and honey, I choose you. And I'm picking up the pieces, ones that we don't have. It's the putting it together, it's making me sad. You're the reason why I can't touch the sky. I want it, I want it. And I am like the sun, revolving everyone. And I love you until we get by. Baby, I love you, you know that we will make it by.
That was Until We Get by Small Tall Order, available on freemusicarchive.org. Moving on to another hot topic in Vermont, here is Jennifer Decker of the Movement Against Basing Nuclear Bombers in Vermont. Hello, we have Jennifer Decker, who is active in the movement against the nuclear bombers at South Burlington International Airport. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Marina. It's good to be on the show with you.
Thank you very much. So can you tell me a little bit about the demonstration tonight?
Yes, we've been having a weekly demonstration for about 10 weeks now outside of Bernie Sanders' congressional office at the top of Church Street in Burlington. We gather for an hour with banners and share information about the basing of the F-35 and all the associated safety issues that go along with the problem basing.
What's the response been to your demonstrations?
Generally, people are really interested in gathering information from us and learning more about the nuclear capability of the plane, some of the environmental problems with the basing, the technological and health and noise issues that we're facing locally, but also the regional issues that the plane impacts.
Do you think you're going to have any effect on Senator Sanders?
Well, we've already had some media attention and national news directed to our protest. We've had a couple of times that the local news has showed up as well and done some brief broadcasts on our issue based off of this particular protest. So we're also building our movement in other ways.
But the senator has not responded to your demands at all?
He has not. He has been approached many times over the years by different constituent groups and has gotten to the point where he does not meet with us and won't address our concerns.
So mostly your demonstration is to a way to reach out to the public.
Exactly. It's a way to educate the public about the fact that, I mean, our literature is basically about how we do support Bernie Sanders on nearly every issue, but this issue with the F-35 is a deal breaker, and we want people to be aware of it so that his constituents will direct more pressure towards him. But primarily, I think many people don't understand that we actually have the power as citizens to cancel the basing if enough of us speak up. And so a lot of it is just raising people's awareness that we can make a difference if we do take action.
How would the citizens be able to cancel the basing of that? Is there a mechanism that would allow that?
Well, it really involves the public opinion and enough people taking action and pressuring our local officials and our congressional delegation. But essentially, if Patrick Leahy or Bernie Sanders or Mira Weinberger or Governor Scott were to say to the Department of Defense, we've changed our minds, we realize this is a really bad idea for our region, that could have the impact to cancel the basing.
What are your concerns with having these F-35s at the Burlington International Airport?
Well, one of the main issues is that they're being retrofitted as nuclear weapon delivery systems. So there is a burgeoning new Cold War, unfortunately. I think many of us perhaps grew complacent over the period of time since the last Cold War ended. But now Trump is ratcheting up the possibility of using nuclear weapons in they call them low-yield nuclear weapons, and he talks about using them in a tactical manner, which is really it's just scientifically inaccurate. The yields of the weapons are four times larger than the Hiroshima and Nagasaki weapons at minimum. And so any launch of any nuclear weapon would initiate a nuclear war, and even a regional nuclear war would cause a global catastrophe environmentally.
Yes. What other hazards are there? I understand the planes themselves are toxic if they burn.
Yes, that's another issue. The stealth coating that's on the planes doesn't function as it's designed. In other words, I think there are some of the enemies have been able to understand the technology well enough and have technology that can outsmart the quote-unquote stealth coating, but the coating is made of toxic materials that, if the plane crashes, could cause a slew of environmental contaminants, both in groundwater and, air pollution as well. So, if a plane were to be carrying a nuclear weapon, which we understand when they first arrive, they won't be carrying nuclear weapons, that the specific planes may not have been retrofitted. Even if they don't have a nuclear weapon, or even if they do, if they crash, the weapon won't detonate during crash, but the stealth coating will ignite and cause all kinds of environmental impacts that Vermont is not prepared to clean up.
Does anyone know what's in those coatings?
We do have folks in our movement who are very cognizant on, very specific scientific research around that. And I can also get you that information and, potentially we could discuss it in another broadcast.
Understood.
There's also another contaminant that has been in the news lately called PFAS that's used in firefighting foam at the airport that's been used by the Vermont Air National Guard. So it's not necessarily specifically related to the F-35, but it's a type of material that they use for testing and drills, and that will continue in relation to the militarized use of our civilian airport. So the state of Vermont is actually suing a party in relation to the manufacturer of PFAS, and so it's ironic that we're not addressing the use of this at our airport locally in a civilian area.
For people who don't know, this chemical is very similar to the PFOA that caused the toxin contamination in Bennington.
Exactly. For our protest outside of Bernie's office, we're educating people about all of these issues. Some of the other issues about the F-35 are technological. The plane was developed over a period of time with so many rapid technological advancements, and as each advancement came along, there were efforts to patch it into the plane. But concurrency, which is what that's called, has caused a lot of technological glitches, and so the F-35 plane is statistically 8 times more likely to crash than the plane that was based here before, which was the F-16s. They were based here until this past April when they were flown out. And it's been a lovely period of time since April living in Burlington. It's been much, much quieter without any military jets here. So we're not looking forward to also a plane that's even louder. In addition to the crash risk, the noise impact is 4 times louder than the F-16s, which was already loud enough to disrupt businesses and classrooms and conversations and cause a lot of annoyance to people living locally. But the F-35 is loud enough to cause hearing damage as well as noise impacts on developing brains. But, these are issues that are extremely concerning to people living in the flight path and the noise impact zone. There's also a tax impact for Burlington residents, because Burlington should be paying a portion of the retrofitting cost for noise abatement near the airport, but none of those details have been worked out yet, and none of the noise abatement will be complete when the planes start arriving in September. And in fact, we've now been told that it might take 20 years to do the noise abatement through the entire neighborhood. So many people will be subjected to harmful levels of noise pollution for decades at this point.
I understand that the airport has actually bought up a huge number of houses and displaced a disadvantaged community to make space for this jet. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, they did that in an area that's very well known for housing shortage, and in which, you know, more, you know, moderate and low income housing is very desperately needed. So, yeah, that was an earlier decision. And at this point, the South Burlington City Council and other parties are saying they don't want to destroy any more housing stock. But it's ironic because they're also saying that the noise levels are at a level that is unfit for human habitation, which essentially they've admitted by saying we need noise remediation. So it's really catch 22, because if you're a resident, you know, yourself and your family, in terms of health impacts as well as stress, people feel stressed by loud noises. But, you know, in addition to the moral and ethical issue, one thing to hear a loud and stressful noise like a helicopter if you know a person is going to rescue someone who's been injured, but it's a whole nother issue to live in the shadow of war and to have these planes based here, which could make us a target in the event of a nuclear attack. Even if they don't have nuclear weapons on board in the moment, the enemy would view that the plane as a delivery vehicle for nuclear weapons and would target the planes first. So these are all like grave concerns that it's been shocking to us here that our politicians don't take our concerns more seriously.
So it seems like for the most part you're depending on pressuring politicians to hear your concerns. Has there been any talk about any sorts of direct actions that would actually hold up deployment of these jets?
Well, we are steadily building our movement and considering importance of, you know, having a very broad coalition engaged for, you know, making strategic decisions. In the meantime, you know, we held the Guardians for Peace and Planet demonstration against the F-35s this past Sunday, right across from the airport in a park area that was actually used to be an area where there had been homes, and it was some of the areas where the homes had been brought up and knocked down.
That would be Sunday, August the 4th?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we held a big demonstration there, and it was the first time that we brought our anti-F-35 demonstration near the airport. You know, we're working on amplifying our level of protest to the point that our elected leaders will hear our concerns and indeed just understand that it's not just us we're wanting to protect, it's them as well from all of these different health impacts and contaminants and noise pollution, as well as the risk of being placed in a moral position where, you know, nuclear attack could be launched by a state National Guard. You know, these are things that are really unprecedented. One thing I hadn't mentioned before is that unlike other nuclear weapon delivery vehicles, the F-35 is the only one that would be operated by a single pilot. It's the only nuclear weapon delivery system that doesn't have the checks and balances of having multiple individuals involved in the final decision to drop a bomb. So that is another variable that's had us very concerned. So, yeah, we have a wonderful coalition of different groups working really hard. Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Vermont Yankee Decommissioning Alliance, the Peace and Justice Center, Vermont Veterans for Peace, a new group that's formed recently called People for Peace and Security, Save Our Skies group, and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom all came together for our August 4th event. And we're looking forward to being in solidarity with more groups around the state, as many of us are also really engaged in a lot of different progressive issues.
How would you tie this struggle to the ongoing struggle against fascism that's been consuming so many of us these last few years?
Well, I think that's a really great question. I really strongly, there's so many different correlations between white nationalism and their agenda destroying diversity. And it's hard to even try to put their agenda into words because it's so horrific. And then some of the imperialism that's going on around the world in terms of, endless wars for oil and the way that, again, like the United States tends to target nations that are poorer with people of different ethnic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds. I think it's going on all over the world, and it's, just very clear that there's these clear, trends and patterns about devaluing life, different cultures, and people of different races. So in addition, it's under Trump that he's the one who's throwing out the nuclear weapons treaties that have protected us for a long time through the doctrine of mutual assured destruction that actually helped to ratchet down the arms race. And he is increasing that. So he's just increasing the level of militarism, which I think is tightly tied at this time in history to police brutality, immigration and customs enforcement, and other dynamics and groups in our society that are essentially agents of oppression. So that's how I see those connections. And I think it's an important conversation for us to be having within the movement is how are we making sure that we're standing for people in different struggles around the planet when we're facing so many of the same dynamics and variables.
How is the movement in Vermont linked to people of color-led and indigenous-led movements for environmental justice? This is obviously an environmental justice issue. They've decided to sacrifice a poor neighborhood that was much higher minority percentage than other places in the Burlington area.
Yeah, the area that's most likely to be impacted in the event of a crash, as well as, continuous noise impacts, is Winooski and then parts of Burlington and South Burlington and some of Williston. But in general, in, Winooski, that's where the largest population of people of color and new Americans and refugees are living. And so there's definitely an environmental racism component. And I think that in terms of bridging gaps between the peace movement, which has been historically in this area, I think more white, there's been more of a white culture within the movement. And so it's a growing edge, I think, for this movement to work on becoming more diverse and more attuned to the concerns of the people who are the most impacted by the basin. So that's something, in terms of outreach, that's something that as a movement we take very seriously and that we're in dialogue and conversation about and taking action in terms of outreach and building those bridges and showing up in solidarity. Many of us from our coalition of peace groups were also demonstrating against ICE recently in Williston.
That was quite an incredible demonstration.
It sure was. Were you there?
I was. So is there anything else you would like to add to this interview?
I just wanted to let you know that I appreciate you reaching out for this conversation and that I can be reached at People for Peace and Security, and our email address is people, PeopleFORPeaceSec @gmail.com. So it's people for peace sec @gmail.com. and we'd be happy to work closely. And we have allies all over the state from the campaign that Citizens Against Nuclear Bombers in Vermont ran this past spring to pass Senate Resolution 5 banning the basing of nuclear-capable planes in Vermont. So we have a statewide contingent and a local contingent, and everyone's continuing to work closely together to address this planned basing because it does have implications regionally, and we're excited to be in solidarity with folks all over Vermont.
Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on the show with me, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Marina. You have a good night.
If you like Vermont Movement News, please consider giving a donation to pay for new equipment and web hosting. We would very much like to purchase better equipment and possibly an additional computer system for our studio. We can accept donations through our Patreon at www.patreon.com/Vermont Movement News. Well, that about wraps up this episode of Vermont Movement News. I hope you enjoyed it. You can visit our website at www.vermontmovementnews.org. We are available on Blueberry, Google Play Music, iTunes, and other directories. We hope to add other platforms soon. Thank you.